Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Head on Fire is a Patreon-supported podcast. Supporters of the show get early access to ad-free episodes, a private Discord server, archives, and more. All benefits are offered on a sliding scale, so no matter your level of donation, you never miss out. If you like this show, consider supporting it with a dollar a month or whatever you can at patreon.com/headonfirepod. Thanks, and enjoy the show. It's the holiday season, which here in the United States means seeing Santa Claus everywhere. And not just one version of Santa. There are cowboy Santas and surfing Santas and, like, really jacked muscular Santas played by J.K. Simmons in the recent movie Red One. And occasionally, it means seeing other figures as they relate to Santa Claus. Mrs. Claus or Santa's children will sometimes be in the spotlight, depending on the media franchise. But in recent years, audiences have begun to hunger for a return to those times when Christmas season meant scary ghost stories and tales of the glories of long, long ago, of giants from the depths of wintry mountains and witches with sharp knives and demons arriving to whip the wicked and steal naughty children away in the night to make a meal of them. Figures like Krampus and Perkta and Gryla, other demons and dark deities from across the oceans, have been turning up in pop culture as a way to remind us that December wasn't always holly or jolly. Ella Harrison is the author of The Book of Spells. She also has a degree in anthropology and uses her social media platform to educate and entertain audiences on the topics of folklore, folk magic, and the history of holiday traditions. And she is my guest today. Here's Ella Harrison. Ella Harrison, welcome to Head on Fire. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you as well for having me. It's really great fun and just like seeing you face to face. And yeah.
I have been such a fan of your content and your platform and your book for so long, but for people who are not me that might not know who you are, tell people who you are and what it is that you do.
Thank you. I always am like the worst with introductions because I know I'm going to forget something. But yeah, my name's Ella Harrison. I started originally on YouTube, which was like, God, years ago at this point, like 6 or 7 years ago.
And the years really do start coming and they do not stop coming.
No, exactly. It's kind of crazy when you think about it. And then I moved over on Instagram as well. And I dabbled a little bit on TikTok and I was like, you know, and I was just like, you know, TikTok's not for me, but yeah. Then I wrote a book which came out. Oh my God.
And if you're watching this on YouTube, I'm holding the book.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful. This is a stunning book, by the way. Did you know when you signed your contract? Because obviously we don't have a clue, like, you know, is it a paperback? Is it a hardcover or whatever? Did you have any idea? Like, when did you know it was going to be this gorgeous object that I'm holding in my hands? Because this is stupidly beautiful.
Okay, because I actually told them, like, I designed that, I did everything. So in the sense of like, I got so fucking, can I cuss here?
Of course.
Okay. I got so fucking lucky because I basically, when we signed the contract, they were like, okay, what do you want for like illustrations, cover? What do you want? And I sent them over my Pinterest board, and I still have that Pinterest board. And then they were like, okay, cool. And then it was the most amazing thing. After I wrote everything, handed it in and everything, we had a meeting where it was my team essentially, right? I know. And we went we had this big Excel sheet and we went page by page and we're like, okay, for this page, what do you want? And I was like, I want birds on this page, or I want bats on this page, or on this page, I want like a girl with her hair braided and things like that. And
then I need a mouse in a dress, yes, dancing in a window surrounded by a wreath.
Yeah,
that's like what I mean.
Was able to literally pick my artists. They were like, okay, these are the artists that we have found for you that we think you would like this vibe that you would like.
Yeah.
And then I was allowed to pick the artist that I wanted. And then they sent me my original cover, which, by the way, was not that cute, to be honest. And then I was like, no, this ain't.
No one's original cover is that cute. Have I ever told you? Did you ever see what the original cover for Dabbler's Guide looked like?
I feel like I faintly remembered one time that
it was like
something.
Pink. It was a pink book. And it, no, not even pink. It was salmon. It was, I'm so, listen, I love the book and it has gone on to have a really good life. So I'm very happy with my book now, but boy, howdy, that first cover, they were really insisting that it should be salmon for some reason.
Oh, wow. No, I actually
redid the cover and I sent it back with this color scheme. I wanted it green and like sunflower yellow.
Yeah.
And actually I think I wanted it more the sunflower yellow and then the greens and stuff throughout. So this was like an inverted version of the color scheme that I wanted. Yeah. I didn't get that. I got blue. But I love the book now. So, but anyway, I digress.
No, that's cool. I really like your cover. In the tarot card that you like kind of went with it and everything.
I did that with my baby Eggsy on there. Yeah, no, I had that done separately. I went to an artist that I loved, Joe Phillips, and he did that for me. Yeah, I really love that.
Yeah, okay, because that was genius. I remember I saw that and I was like low-key kind of jealous. It's like, oh my God, a tarot card? Can we do that?
Yeah. So I did that. And so I wanted to own the design because I wanted to be able to use it and have art and stuff available for people. And I knew that if I had the publisher do it, then they would always own that art. So I wanted to own it and license it from the artist and stuff. So I took that on myself. And I knew exactly what I wanted. I drew because I dabble in art. So I drew out exactly what I wanted. I sent it to Joe. Joe and I had worked together before. This sounds so when I say this, but I had modeled for him and he had used me as a model for one of his characters. And I really loved his work. I really loved what he did for me. So when I was like, okay, I need a tarot card of me as the dabbler instead of the fool. He used my dog. The dog that's on the cover is my dog Eggsy.
Yeah.
I have that yellow hat is my real yellow hat. I have that hat. It's great. I love that hat. I love it. But I mean, this is just a beautiful, it's not just a great book because you really know your stuff. It's called The Book of Spells by Ella Harrison, 150 Magical Ways to Achieve Your Heart's Desire. But it really is one of those books that like, I could just imagine when I was like 15 and going to the witchy aisle of the bookstore and like sitting down and flipping through. Like it really just does feel like a very magical object.
Thank you.
But you know what I really love about you and your platform is you're also such a big advocate for folklorists, folklore, for talking about, you know, as I feel like, you know, in recent years, a lot of internet culture has gotten very curious to dabble in lots of different cultures, especially as, you know, Christmas, this time of year, this winter season, I feel like as more people start being introduced to other cultures because of how ubiquitous social media is, people are like really excited to learn about different traditions around the world, especially because of all the different types of, I'm going to say the word creatures just because I don't know of a better word, creatures, beings, deities, monsters, you know, all sorts of things from around the world, mostly European, that we'll probably talk about today, but that are also associated with Christmas that aren't Santa.
Yeah.
And that's been really, really fun to see kind of grow and blossom on the internet. And you are such a wealth of knowledge of specifically. So I thought it would be a really fun opportunity today to get to just chat about where some of these traditions come from, what they look like where you live, which is Germany, right? What these look like from you and, you know, maybe help people get a little bit inspired to bring some of this magic into their own home for the holiday season. So I guess right up front, what does this time of year look like over there for you?
Oh, I think this is honestly, I'm going to say something potentially controversial. I was just talking about this with Leah actually too, that I think winter and like the entire like Christmas / Yule time has kind of become my favorite over autumn. Like, I know everyone's like, autumn. I'm like, you know what? I think I prefer winter time because it's just so active down here, especially. I'm in Bavaria specifically. And it is really quite different down here than it is up like north, or, you know, like we're very, very like, even within Bavaria, there's like so many regional differences. It's actually kind of like astonishing sometimes to see and realize like, oh, wow, you guys like name things differently entirely. But yeah, it's just such an active time for us down here with like the spirits and stuff. Like for us, especially, I know even if people always say, oh, the veil is thinning around Halloween time. But I feel like for us, it's usually more the Rauhnächte, which is the rough nights, I guess you could translate it to, between the 25th of December and the 5th or 6th of January, which is when the wild hunt is out and about. And you've just like, and there's just so many different pieces of folklore around this time of year, which makes sense considering that this time of year would have been where people were more likely to spend indoors around the fire and like talk about stories, right?
One of those holdovers here in the US is the lyric, "There'll be scary ghost stories and tales of the glories of Christmas is long, long ago."
Yeah.
And a lot of people kind of gloss over that. But in recent years, I think we've been a little bit more analytical and interrogative of that, to say, wait, why are we telling scary ghost stories at Christmas? And we kind of forget that even like Dickens, A Christmas Carol, you know, some of the most iconic Christmas stories are ghost stories, and they're kind of creepy and rather dark. And I think that's a really good inroad for people to start learning about some of these traditions and maybe why. So maybe, I guess, let's ask why right up front. Why do we tell scary ghost stories around that time of year?
Well, my personal, and I mean, obviously, you know, I've studied anthropology. And so I have a bachelor's in anthropology. And so this is just my personal sort of theory combined with what I have read and stuff is, I mean, you have to imagine this time of year, obviously, especially for people's back in the day, let's say, was a scary time period where food potentially was scarce. You know, you had like higher risk of death just because of cold, and this, you know, that type of environment was really harsh back in the day, especially. And then you have the added thing of like, our house, for example, is from 1770, and you still hear that. Yeah, it's really old. And it's an old farm, and like our wooden beams, like they creak at night, you know, and like you start hearing like little like mice and stuff in the attic that's right above us, and you start hearing like pitter patter, and like it's a little bit more, you know, and like you genuinely have so much fog, like it's so foggy. And it's like, it kind of feels like the veil is like, you physically see the veil right now, you know? And like, you have just a lot of death being a topic in general too, because obviously everything outside is kind of like dying. And a lot of times, you know, interestingly enough, people actually tend to die more during this time of year too. And so you just have a lot of that kind of total, you know, like if you put that all together, I guess that must have just like really added to that sort of culture of ghost stories and death and like spirits and hauntings and just like mysteriousness too, you know?
And even just from a very practical aspect, you can't really go outside. People are inside. You want something to do. Yeah. What do you do at night? You tell stories to one another. What do we tend to tell? You know, when we're around a campfire, when we're around a fire and it's dark and a little cold and a little creepy outside, what do? Well, we tell a ghost story. Sure. And it's at this time of year when we're all inside. It's winter. It's dark. The days are very, very short, and the nights are very, very long. And so we're all inside, and we're all huddled around a fire trying to keep warm, and our provisions are low. You know, the entire world outside feels dead right now, right? You know, all the trees are, well, they used to be. Now global warming. But now, thanks to climate change, those leaves are hanging on a lot longer than they used to. But, you know, we had barren branches, and the world is white, and we're thinking about mortality, and we're talking about ghost stories, and we're talking about what waits us out in the dark. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of want to start asking about some of these creatures that have started to kind of come back into the zeitgeist of cultural conversation. I want to start with the first one. I think it's probably the most popular non-Christmas character is Krampus.
Mm-hmm. Probably. Well, I would say so.
I know that Krampus here feels fair. Like, Krampus is kind of a reintroduction into the culture here. I feel like it's very different from what Krampus is like over there. I was just watching a video that you did of the parade, the Krampus parade. Tell me about that.
Yeah. Okay. So that was really fun. And so actually I took my sister and her boyfriend there, and they've never experienced a Krampus like parade or Lauf or like run, essentially is what it's called. And they are fun, and that's what they were not prepared for. They actually whip. I have bruises on my legs. They don't like
it. Oh no.
Yeah, like they go at it.
Do you ever get the feeling that anybody in those costumes maybe takes it a tiny bit too far?
Oh yeah, my sister's boyfriend, he's from Berlin, and he did not expect that. And I don't know, we actually were talking in the car, like if there's some psychology about like maybe his body language. They kept coming specifically at him, and they were like going at it, and we were like, "Oh, are you okay?" But yeah, Krampus is really interesting because he comes only on the 5th. Of December, really, to be honest with you, 5th or 6th of December. And
it's not the night before Christmas?
No.
Because I think that's the version that I've heard, is that he comes like the night before and takes care of all the bad kids, and then Santa comes the next day and like is taking care of all the good kids.
No. He has nothing to do with Christmas. He's only really one night. And he kind of is, it's funny because that's one of those American misconceptions, I guess you could say. He is like basically Saint Nicholas can't be like fussed to do the dirty work, so Krampus does it for him. But they're very much like a little duo, and he like Saint Nicholas, which I guess Saint Nicholas is like where you have Santa Claus. That's where I'm at. He kind of brings gifts. And I had a story when he came to my house when I was a little kid. Where essentially
Krampus did?
No, like Saint Nicholas.
Okay.
Yeah. My parents didn't hire a Krampus guy, they just hired Saint Nicholas.
I was like, that's terrifying and also great. That's amazing.
Yeah. Oh, Germans are all about that. Like,
here's what I know about American parents. If Krampus were a bigger deal here in the States, there are 1000% parents that would hire a Krampus to give their kid an attitude adjustment and throw that kid in a sack. I just know it.
Yeah, they do that here too. It's just my mom, I guess, didn't really like, you know, bother. But because basically the St. Nicholas guy, he came over, he had a big gold book, and he knew all the like naughty things I did all year. But it is actually a tradition, especially down here in Bavaria and more in Austria, that you will have Krampus like and St. Nicholas come to your individual house, and then they do an entire scene where you have a table usually in between you, and the Krampus will start like, you know, the actor obviously will try to like flip the table over and like get the kid and like scare the absolute Jesus out of the kid, and like he's got the whips and he tries to go at you, and the parents potentially will get like a slight little like nick here and there just to scare the children. Have you seen German folklore? We love scaring our children into submission.
This is crazy and I love it.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, we have, this is a whole other topic called Struwwelpeter. It's like an old children's book. A kid sucks his thumb and his parents tell him not to. So someone comes and cuts his thumb off. Yeah.
Yes. Wait, is that a different one or is that still Krampus?
That's a different one. But like, we love our like scary children.
Wait, is that one of the Yule lads that does it?
No, I'm not sure. Potentially. I mean, like even Krampus technically sometimes says that he eats the children.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it depends. Like, it kind of goes from, like, region to region. Sometimes he just whips you. Sometimes he puts you in his backpack and, like, takes you off to, like, hell or wherever. And then sometimes he just, like, eats you. Yeah.
I love that so much. Like, do you have a favorite depiction of Krampus? So I know over here, we tend to take holiday figures and we put them into movies or TV shows. Mm-hmm. So that has started to happen here. Is that a bigger deal where you live? Are there any movies, TV shows about Krampus that we just should not miss? You know what's so funny is that what comes to mind immediately for me is a lot of people point to the TV show Grimm and the episode that they did with Krampus as a really good depiction. Do you have one? I know that Krampus was also a pretty big figure in the recent holiday, I would say blockbuster, but it flopped at the box office, even though I loved it. Red One with The Rock and J.K. Simmons. Krampus was a big deal in that movie.
Okay.
But do you all have are there any big Krampus movies or TV shows or anything?
You know what? Not really. And it's kind of funny. And I wonder if this is maybe like unconscious of me. I have never seen a single American movie or show with Krampus. And now I'm almost wondering, is it because I know that your depiction is so wrong that I kind of am like, it's not worth watching?
That's very fair. That's very fair. I didn't know if you'd even at least seen the you know, the holiday horror movie that is just Krampus, where he like literally drags an entire family to hell, like kids and all, like just everybody. They're all bad and they all get taken to hell.
Oh, okay. No, I have seen pictures and he looks like an evil Santa, and that's not what he is.
I love that. Yeah. I love. Are there any German films or anything that you're just like, oh, well, when I want to snuggle up and think about death, I watch this Krampus movie?
Not a specific Krampus, like not a Krampus one.
Or books? Are there any books?
I'm trying to think. Not, I mean, we have the Christmas cards. So we have the Christmas cards that are super popular, like Who's from Krampus, which is like greetings from Krampus. But to be honest with you, it's funny because he seems to be more like a lived tradition rather than having really made it into, like, we get the US stuff like translated. But that's kind of really it, to be honest with you, because we have it.
Oh, that's so fascinating.
With the parades and everything, right? Like, because we have Krampus for the 5th of December, and then we have the Perchten, and they look almost identical for around the 21st. Depends on, like, some people, you know, some villages do it like later, where you have the Perchtenlauf, which is almost a bigger deal here locally, or like a lot of times Krampus is kind of like, oh yeah, whatever, Krampus. The Perchtenlauf, however, you know,
now Perchta, that's like a giantess or a witch or somebody the good kids get presents. Does Perchta bring presents, but the bad kids get their stomachs slit open and all their intestines taken out?
They get like their stomachs stuffed with hay and stuff like that. Yeah, or like coal or sticks.
That's wild. Yeah. I love it. So tell me more about her.
Okay, so she is an old goddess. She kind of goes, she has fascinating lore. You could make an entire like hour, 2 hour long like dissertation video on this. Frau Perchta is this old, probably, or we're pretty sure, pagan historical roots goddess. And she is both hidden or shining one in translation. And she is fascinating because she's kind of really associated with both winter, but also like rebirth. So sometimes people especially know the slitting of the stomach, but there obviously also is like the other side to her. And you see that in these runs where you have the beautiful Perchta and the ugly Perchta. A lot of times it's a two-faced mask. And she runs a horde, and these horde of people or beings are Perchten. And they look similar to Krampus. They're like very horned, fur clad, you know, claws, like scary looking and stuff. And then it goes really deep into like different lore and things like that. Frau Perchta also is really kind of connected, like if you look at like all these different connections, because Europe has a lot of like shared where you're kind of like, oh, this feels really similar to this. And they're like really far apart. Perchta is kind of very much connected with La Befana, which is like the Italian witch that comes on the 6th of January.
Yes, I was going to ask about her because I know that there's a lot of Christmas witches that are sometimes very beneficial, very sweet figures. I know La Befana typically has a lot of roots, mostly in Italy. But, you know, but they have these very sweet roots, but they might have some spookier origins.
Yeah. Most likely. So a lot of these things come out of the Alpine region, which again makes sense. Very secluded town people that oftentimes were so snowed in they couldn't leave, hence scary stories. Yeah, and so she also is kind of set to, and this is like a north versus south German kind of difference, or especially Austrian, Berchta or Berchta is kind of the leader of the wild hunt. Down here, at least. I know up north, it's more Odin or Wodan, but down here, it's more Perchta. And then you have this entire lore about, like, the Pechten and Perchta. Who are they? They are very mysterious. You can't really describe, like, what exactly do they even look like, because they're that kind of, you know, like, just mysterious, very like liminal. And then you have lore about like, oh, they are unbaptized children that she collects throughout the year, or like they're unbaptized souls, or, you know, it's obviously a very Christianized story of this specific lore or folk tale. But yeah, she will come. She's technically a little bit of a witch at this point, and she will come also to your house to make sure that throughout the entire year you did your spinning, and she's very connected to spinning and fate and everything, and that you worked really hard, and that now you are resting. So you're not allowed to do your, you're not allowed to catch up anymore. Like, if you didn't do your work, tough shit, you were meant to, you get your belly slit. But she also does reward, and she also is like, you know, she's got like, of course, not just black and white aspects to her.
Are people like, so I know that when it comes to the US, we tend to, because we like to commercialize everything, mm-hmm. movies and TV shows, you know, we're constantly, you know, we've always got a new movie or a TV show about Santa Claus coming out, or, you know, related figures this time of year, the magic of Christmas and yada, yada, yada. So it feels like we're always kind of like adding to the lore of Santa, you know, stuff about his wife, stuff about his hypothetical kids, stuff about where he lives and why it's the North Pole, and, you know, different versions of that. And some of that feels like it sometimes becomes a part of that, you know, myth. People start grabbing onto those pieces and then moving forward mm-hmm. with it. Does that happen in Europe? Do you know, are there modern additions to any bits of lore that get added and taken with, or do we just hold on to the old traditions?
So I think with Krampus, for example, really specifically, there was that one book a few years ago where, I don't know, I don't remember, but it was some kind of Krampus, and he was very much tied to the Nordics, and that he was Loki's son, which just completely made up. But I feel like you now, like, you do see people, like, kind of, you know, parroting that, let's say, and it's just incorrect. But I do wonder, because that's kind of how lore obviously starts evolving. I feel like in 100 or 200 years, this might be where people are like, oh, yeah, he's Loki's son, you know, and it's just accepted lore. We'll see, I guess. But I do feel like what you do start seeing here is people trying to define and especially differentiate between Perchta and Krampus. And now you do start having like very specific regions being like, no, Krampus has two horns. Perchten have more than two horns. Or like, no, Perchten are like, they have no anthropomorphic features, whereas Krampus is more anthropomorphic and more devil-like. You know, like, you definitely have that kind of evolving nature as well. And then Perchta obviously kind of becoming more, like, not more popular or more known, but I feel like, you know, like, kind of re-emerging, because Krampus has definitely kind of stolen the show a little bit.
when we were at the Christmas market yesterday, my husband and I, there's an entire booth from Germany, just about Krampus.
Oh my
just
God.
Krampus. Yeah. Just Krampus ornaments. Wow. And stuff. It's great. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. I have a ton for my house. It's great. So let's see. We've talked about Perchta. We've talked about Krampus. We've talked a little bit about Befana and some of kind of like the Christmas witches. Mm-hmm. What about Gryla? That's another character that was in Red Wine, and I was kind of surprised because you don't normally see her in media.
Yeah, I'm going to be very honest with you. I don't know that much about that figure at all, to be honest.
It's so fun. So I always thought that it was sort of like just basically another version of Perchta, or Perchta and Gryla just were like, you know, two different names for the same thing. But yeah. Like, no, this whole other thing. Nope. Yeah. Gryla and her Yule lads. And then, you know, there's the depiction on Chilling Adventures of Sabrina that I think people fell in love with and stuff.
Oh,
but
yeah. I remember that. Yeah, I remember. I didn't like that show. But yeah, no, it's interesting because even Campos is really kind of Austrian and Bavarian. And then you go up and it's like, they know of him, but you'll have like Pelsmertel and like you'll have like, or Belsnickel essentially, right?
Everybody knows that because of The Office.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. But it's really interesting because you have like, it's kind of like a boogeyman type figure, right? That obviously, you know, parents have to now deal with their children actually being at home. So please behave.
So maybe even though all of these figures are definitely real, maybe it was a good opportunity for some parents to, I don't know, dress up in old rags and beat their kids.
They're like, finally. Oh my gosh.
You've had this coming, Johnny.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I feel like it is really interesting, obviously, because there's so much to it. And like, you know, they are kind of their own thing and obviously their own unique, you know, like they're in their own right. But there is definitely a very like a red thread, let's say, where you notice these differences and similarities, especially with the good kids. Gifts, bad kids.
The good kid's gift, the bad kid's punishment. Yeah. But a lot of these figures, you know, the bad ones are dressed in rags or they're very furry. A lot of them are carrying different kinds of switches or a cane or something to whip people with. Many of them have a sack to carry kids away. There's a lot of eating of bad kids.
Yeah.
And the wearing of new clothes. That's a thing. The wearing of new clothes to keep some of the bad ones away or something, right?
Yeah, you're supposed to like present yourself in like the best way forward, right? It is curious because obviously, again, even the like way that it's kind of dressed, it makes sense because that's what people had on hand, like furs, bones and horns and things like that, you know, these like scary looking masks that oftentimes were just like dirt smeared in your face. And then the bells are like a big thing. Like if you come to one here ever, or I think they even have these in the US now too, the bells are like so noisy. And obviously it is, and the Pechten specifically are more so to actually ward off evil spirits with their bells.
Really?
So you have
they kind of look like the evil spirits that you might want to be warding off.
So exactly, but it's kind of that thing where you take a little bit of the poison to like ward from it. Yeah. And it's very interesting.
I get it.
This is very similar to what you have during like Halloween time, where you have that very famous sort of like, or like a couple of different theories, right? But like one of them was obviously like people dressed up as scary beings to ward off the scary being.
Right.
And that's kind of what we have with Pechten just in December.
I love that. Are there any other figures that we're leaving out? I feel like there's a cat somewhere, but also I don't want you to, you know, be forced to speak about something that's not your bailiwick, but are there any other figures that you just love, that you just wish that we would talk about more, that you think are so underserved?
So I will for me, the Pechten for sure. Let me think. I know as soon as I'm like done talking, I'm like, oh, I forgot this, you know, figure or whatever, right? So it depends because I know in the north, obviously, they have like the Yule goat type thing.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
But that's much more like Nordic. And that's another thing that people sometimes misconceive. Down here, the Celtic culture, or like Celtic, this is more Celtic of an old ancient region, whereas above the Danube or above the Alpine sort of like border, that's when you kind of go into Germanic and then like, you know, that type of territory. But down here you have a lot of like Celtic stuff. And that's why I feel like there's a lot of like similarities to certain other regions that then had those influences, of course. But let me think. I mean, you have a bunch of different folk creatures. I know a big one that is really popular now here in Germany, especially. And that one is kind of new, let's say, because my mom, for example, is like, this is new. Are those little Christmas elf looking things?
The Yule lads, right?
I guess. I have a bunch of them around. They've overtaken my house too. But there's like different names for them and everything too, right? I call them gnomes. They're not technically gnomes though. I will say I'm not that well educated on those specifically. But
aren't they all supposed to be? So if I'm not mistaken, and I could be completely wrong about what I think they are, but if I'm not mistaken, those are the Yule lads that Gryla has, and each of them is like causes a different, very specific kind of mischief. Like one makes the milk go bad, and one makes something or other happen, and they've kind of gotten very sanitized, I would say, over the years. But I don't know, I could be wrong. Are there any, while you're thinking about that, are there any traditions that you, that just say this time of year to you that, you know, you would love to see get a little bit more love, a little bit, if people want to have this version of the holiday season in their home? What are some of your favorite traditions of this time of year?
Ooh, okay. So we have, I feel like a lot, and a lot I think have kind of already come over to the US. Like the advent calendars have definitely kind of come to you guys. Do you have the advent wreath with the four candles?
Sometimes, but more often than not, it's the actual calendar itself. I have seen that though, and I've seen that in churches.
Yeah, they tend to be more like Catholic, as far as I know.
Yeah, or I think I was at like an Episcopalian or something, like one of those that's like not Catholic, but it's like it should be.
Yeah. Then what else?
Not Catholic, but still very intense.
Yeah, exactly. Well, okay, 5th of December. So basically what happens on the 5th of December is Nicholas and Krampus come. You leave your shoes outside by the front door, though somehow next to the hearth. And then you get like chocolates and like mandarins and nuts and stuff in there. Then every Sunday leading up, you have the Advent where you light the specific candle. Now, one thing that is really different, and I'm going against tradition here right now with my Christmas tree.
You have a tree? I didn't think that was as popular there.
Yeah, so they are there. Christmas trees are from Germany. Well, technically, interestingly enough, because I lived in Latvia, the first recorded decorated Christmas tree is actually from Riga in Latvia from the 15th century or something like that, like really, really early. Which a lot of historians actually get wrong. They always are like, oh, it's Victorian. And it's like, actually, no. But people just forget the Baltics.
Hot take.
But here in Germany, the tradition is that the Christkind, oh, good point. That's another figure. There we go. Sometimes things are so obvious that I forget them. The Christkind, which is very Bavarian as well, or Southern, she comes, she's this angel, and she brings we don't really have Santa Claus. She comes on Christmas Eve. She brings the tree all decorated.
Now, is she the one that wears the wreath, or is that in France or something that I'm thinking of?
I think that's Norway, and that's a different one, different time.
Okay.
But Christkind, she's like a literal angel here. I have a straw one.
Aww.
Yeah, she's like a literal angel. She comes, and so I'm like all over the place.
No, please.
On the 5th of December, the tradition is, okay, you wait for Nikolaus, but also what you do is you write your wish list. And that wish list, Nikolaus passes on to the Christkind. The Christkind then on Christmas Eve brings the tree and drops off the presents. And you hear that she was there by the ringing of the bell. And that's when you're allowed to come downstairs into the living room. And that's
Wait. So the tree doesn't go up until Christmas Eve?
Yeah.
That is a busy angel. That is a very busy angel, because that is a lot to do.
Yeah, it is. That's
for an angel after it. For all the kids that are listening, I just need you to know that the angels in your lives are very busy after you go to bed.
Yeah, absolutely. No, exactly. Not even like after you go to bed. In the afternoon, because we have our Christmas is on the 24th. We don't care about the 25th. The 25th, we don't care. That's when you chill. The 24th. Is where it's at for us.
Okay.
If you go to church, you go to church. One dedicated person tends to stay at home. That obviously
Let the angel in.
Exactly. Yes. And exactly. And then when you come home, you usually tend to hear the like ringing of the bell. And then essentially you have, in my family, it was that the Christkind brought the tree, brought the presents. We go unwrap our
presents. So Santa doesn't bring presents in Germany.
Well, in the north.
Santa said F them kids in the South.
Yeah,
because Santa said F them kids.
Well, they had to split. It's just such a huge country. They had to split it up.
See, this is what I've always wanted. The movie that I have always wanted, the film franchise or TV show or whatever, if we're going to do it about winter season, I don't want Santa as like the guy who has to go all over the world. I want Santa as one of many, many figures who has just like regional domain.
Yeah.
And I want him to be like equal to like all, like the angel and the Italian witch and the weird giantess lady and the Yule lads and the French angel girl and American Santa in his cowboy boots or whatever. Like, that's what I love. I love how all of the, and I love how just so regional it is. It's like, well, here he comes this day, but over there, Santa said, F them kids. I love that.
What it is, we need, so basically, you know, obviously, Pirates of the Caribbean, where they have
of all course.
The regional, like, the pirate
app
we need, but, like, the gift owner.
I would love that, and that's why I really liked Red One, but I'm gonna digress. I was the only person on Earth that liked that movie.
I'm going to have to Google it because I've never even heard of it.
No, it was supposed to be like the Avengers, but Christmas, and it flopped. Mm-hmm. And my husband and I adored it. And I was like, oh, this is going to be great. Everybody's going to love this. And then I went on social media the next day and it was like, this was terrible. It's a box office bomb. This is the worst movie ever made. And I was like, am I on drugs? Is this what that feels like?
Oh no. Okay. Yeah. God, there's some movies. I have the opposite where I watch a movie and I'm like, this is awful. And then obviously the reviews come in and I'm like, are we watching the same movie?
Well, there's entire giant pieces of culture that I think I've seen one Fast and the Furious movie and they've made like 20 of them. So there's a lot of pieces of culture. I don't watch football games, for example. That's big here. There's a ton of pieces of culture I just don't partake in.
Same. Yeah. Same. But yeah. But yeah, back to then Christmas.
Okay. So we've got an angel. Uh-huh. She comes on Christmas Eve. Mm-hmm. She puts a tree up and leaves all the presents. And mm-hmm. Santa is basically just your hookup. He brings you a little chocolate on the 5th. Mm-hmm. And then you get the angel who comes later, which I love that. I wish we would do that here because I have people saying, hey, I need your Christmas list all the way into September. And I'm like, no, I will give it to you. I will give it to you when Krampus and Santa come by. I will give it to you then. Mm-hmm. And then he will tell the angel. And if the angel wants to tell you what my Christmas list is, then that's how that will work.
Exactly.
This is a better system.
And also,
and what I like is that it's a team effort. Yeah, it's a whole team of people.
Exactly. And that's another thing that is kind of important. So at least with my family, we actually said thank you to our parents because they were the ones, like my mother never said, oh, there's this like factory where all these gifts are made, because then you have kids being like, they're imagining the most crazy ideas for gifts. And then the parents are like, well, I can't, you know, like that doesn't exist. Whereas for my family, at least, it was always like my parents were the ones, or everyone, you know, was the ones, like my father's over in New Zealand. The angel just like picks it up and brings it. And then you still say thank you to your mother or to your aunt or to whoever ever actually like gave the gift. And the angel is like this big collector. And so you've got that.
So everybody gets the gifts, but the angel basically is the postal service, the Christmas postal. I kind of like that better because it's very much a team. There is still Christmas magic involved.
Yeah.
It's still Christmas magic. But we don't, there's not as big of a bubble burst.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, in 10 years.
And I think it keeps children a little bit more like, you know, not upset when a child gets some like PlayStation and they don't, you know. So I think that was, at least for me, that was a good experience to have that. And then you have dinner.
I love Chris. Tell me all about the Christmas food. I must know about all the traditions.
Okay. So down here, especially down here, we have what is called raclette and fondue.
Yeah, girl, listen, we have raclette and fondue. I know what cheese is.
Okay. So we love that.
She's listen, Ella Harrison was just like, okay, I know that you Yanks don't understand, but we have cheese. Have you heard of cheese?
Yeah.
And listen, did you know that you can heat cheese up and then put it on bread?
Yes.
Listen, You pathetic Yanks don't understand the power of melted cheese.
No, but not only that, we actually have this thing where you have like a pot of oil and then you have got little pieces of either meat and like shrimp and then you put them in too, right? So you're welcome for like bringing this over to America. You're welcome. And so that's what my family does. But then obviously I know that there are certain dishes that are very traditional, which is like goose and duck and fish.
I have had exactly one Christmas goose in my life, and it, I think it's kind of like turkey, just in the sense of like, are we just doing this because it's tradition? Because does anybody actually like this? This can't, people can't be doing this because they like it. Yeah. This is not, this
I've never had turkey in my life.
Don't. It's, yeah, no. I mean, for Thanksgiving this year, it's very traditional at Thanksgiving to have a turkey in the US.
Yeah.
And my family this year decided we're doing a beef tenderloin. And that was a superior Thanksgiving option. We still had all the sides. Most everybody prefers all the side dishes at Thanksgiving anyways.
Exactly.
You know, all of your various potato dishes, all of your various, you know, the kind of, the very rich, indulgent side dishes that you typically have at some kind of harvest festival to use stuff up and use things, you know, that aren't going to survive the winter. But, you know, these really rich, indulgent dishes, that big, you know, fatty meal as we go into the holiday season, that kind of thing.
Exactly.
And that, but yeah, then we chose turkey, which is, it's not known for being a very flavorful bird.
It's dry,
just known for being an American bird.
Yeah.
It was actually, fun fact, this is not exactly an unknown fact, but fun fact, it was almost the national bird instead of the bald eagle. Ben Franklin lobbied very, very hard to get the turkey to be the national bird. And honestly, I think we would have been a better country had we wanted to be turkeys instead of eagles.
So has anyone ever tried eating a bald eagle for Thanksgiving?
Well, that would be a federal crime.
Oh, okay.
So no. Also, oh, another thing about bald eagles, everybody thinks they sound wrong.
Yeah.
The sound that they make that people think of as the bald, like that, that bald eagle cry is actually the cry of a hawk that they always have to overdub because the bald eagle sounds so silly. And I just think that that is the most American, that's the most United States thing ever, is we picked a bird that sounds like a freaking dork when it opens its mouth. So we dub it every single time.
I feel so, like it's really, it really does summarize.
It's very us. It's very our culture, where it's like, listen, this is, that's how that sounds. No, it isn't. Yes, it is. Now it is.
Yeah. I feel like this is one of the things that, especially like growing up in, I kind of moved around a lot, and everyone, I remember there was this kind of like shift going from America is so cool, we want to go to America, to, you know what, maybe not. As more, the more we learned about it, the more we were like, you know what?
Yeah. You know, I know that you just got married. Congratulations. Mm-hmm. But if you need another husband or two, my husband and I would be very happy to marry you and live there.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, I feel like Germany is, I feel like, very cool, but you know, I know that certain people have like very big issues with the lack of cereal options, for example, or like I don't know.
Well, we have a lack of a healthcare option, so I'll take cereal. I'll take cereal scarcity all day long. Yeah. That's fine with Krampus. Me.
Yeah.
And you have Krampus, which is better.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, goose. We've got goose. Sorry. Let me get back to the topic. We've got goose. Yeah. Any other like traditions that we do that we love?
Let me think. The thing is, I also had, because my dad is from New Zealand and very English and stuff. So sometimes I have to like be like, okay, no, this is British. This is the German. Because then I remember things from my childhood. And it's like, no, like, for example, the lucky bone from the chicken.
The wishbone.
Like wishbone, thank you. Or like the crackers, but that's all probably more British. In Germany, what we have is a chocolate. So we have like a three-stage fondue. We have the meat, we have the cheese, and then we have like chocolate where we dip blueberries or mandarins. Good point, mandarins. What do you call them? Clementines, I think, the little ones. Or like
clementines cuties. And mandarins are two
don't
different
you guys
oranges.
Call them cuties?
Oh, well, that's a brand name for for a type of orange. But yeah, clementines and mandarins are two different types of, but yes, teeny tiny little oranges and other citrus fruits are big at this time of year, because it used to be very hard to get them. So it was a novelty to get an orange at Christmas. And now it's very easy to get them, most especially because of climate change. But we just kept doing it.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And then in Germany, we have Glühwein, which is like hot wine.
I always want to love this, and I hate it so much.
Oh no, maybe you've not had a good one.
No, see, listen, I'm not really a big wine drinker, and making it hot doesn't make it better for me.
Okay, so it's not like, okay, so the thing is, it's very much like spices in there. Like, it's basically just like barely any wine, and then orange juice, usually spices. Like
maybe if I could drink it cold, maybe if I could drink it like a punch, maybe that would be better. It's never been my thing. It's never been my thing. I know that's bad. But my mother-in-law from Mexico makes a punch, and I have no idea if this is actual Spanish or if this is like anglicized, like Spanglish. Mm-hmm. She always said, you know, ponche. There's like saffron, literally starts with a big thing of water and just starts adding fruits and spices and like, you know, saffrons in there and cinnamon and citrus and all of this stuff. And it just is like slow cooked and turned into the most amazing punch you've ever had in your entire life. But there's no wine in it, but I feel like that's about as close to the experience as I'm ever going to get. But for some reason, that little bit of wine in there, all I smell when you heat it up, all I smell is the alcohol, and I just don't like it. It's a me thing. It's a me thing. It might be psychological. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
You need to try Kinderpunsch.
What is
Kinderpunsch? Kinderpunsch is the solution to all your problems. Kinderpunsch is the children.
I could use the solution to all of my problems.
It is what essentially you give children, because so in Germany we're weird with alcohol and children. So our laws are strange. At 16, you're allowed to legally drink beer and anything over 7% or under 7%, I think. So wine, beer, all that's okay with 16, right? Now, you're allowed to drink at 12, 10, 13 as well, in the supervision of your parents.
Okay.
So, for example, at the Oktoberfest, if you go with your parents and you're 13, you're allowed to drink a beer. That's fine.
Sure. No, yeah, of course.
and so what we do have is Kinderpunsch, which is essentially Glühwein, or like malt cider, wine, I think it is. One sec. Chip wants to go on his chair. But it's just fruit, like, juices, essentially. It's, like, without the alcohol. And it's
that would be me. I would love that. Yeah. That would be me.
Yeah, exactly. Or, like, if you're pregnant, for example, you know.
It's me. I'm pregnant. Hi.
There you go. Perfect. So that's for you. Exactly. So that is something that you probably would really like then.
Probably. Yes. I love that. Yule logs? Do we do a Yule log where you are? Is that north as well?
That's more north, which I actually experienced and was so cool in Latvia, because my husband is Latvian, and they did that in kindergarten and everything. Like they're very, very, they were actually Latvians and Lithuanians were the last pagans of Europe. And Jakob Grimm writes about them in the Teutonic mythology. And he actually says that the countryside folks most likely retained a lot of that paganism, because they only were Christianized in like the 15th century. That they retain a lot of that even going into the 1700s. And they still have that, like, you can kind of feel it and see it. And they have the Yule log. That was really cool. But down here, not quite so much, to be honest. I feel like it is coming more so due to, like, the neo-pagan sort of, you know.
The globalization of Americanized paganism.
Yeah. And so if you go to our grocery store, you can now get the Advent wreath, and you can also get like a Yule log version of that.
Now, is the Yule log version? Oh, and you just have the candle set in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. See, I had one of those that I had for my table, just like a log with the four candles, and I had that for my table. But then I also try to burn. Do you all do anything for solstice, for the longest night? I know that there's a lot of different traditions about longest night where you try to, like, you know, light all the candles in your house and you stay up and read, or you stay up and tell one another stories or something like that. Does that mean anything for you all there?
That's usually when you have the Pechten run.
Okay.
So I'm going to the one that is on the 21st of December, and it's in Salzburg, and which is in Austria, of course. And because it's not as commercialized and kind of gentrified as the Munich one, like the Munich one is overrun. As I say this, the Salzburg one is probably going to be awful next year. But yeah, the Salzburg one, it's basically going to be the Pechten that come on that time. So that's, I think, kind of when we start having like that liminal theme going on again. However, it is interesting because not every German will know about it, especially if they don't really move in the circles of like traditions. And I will say this about Germany, it is kind of interesting because a lot of these traditions have sort of kind of had like a slow death, and they're kind of reawakening now. But a lot of people will still not know about it. And unfortunately, and that is a different topic too, you kind of see that even with our like witchcraft. Like if you look at any sort of like witchy sort of store or section, it's the most cultural appropriative, like just everything. There's a dream catcher here, and there's like evil eye from like Greek Turkish, you know. And
then I had the privilege of speaking with the owner of Treadwell's in London. It's one of the oldest occult bookstores in London, one of the oldest in the world. But she said, you know, the globalization of Americanized spirituality has really transformed even conversations in Europe. I mean, suddenly, she said, you know, suddenly people were asking me for white sage, and I'd never heard of white sage. Like, I didn't even, like, that has no foundation. There's no basis for that in Europe. Like, that's not a thing here. And suddenly I was being inundated with requests for that. And suddenly I was being inundated with requests for, you know, all sorts of things that really had no basis in any kind of European spiritual tradition or anything like that. So it's kind of wild to see how American culture, even as niche as American paganism, American spirituality, American witchcraft, American occultism, has spread out throughout the world, thanks in large part to publishing and social media, and really affected those conversations everywhere. It's wild.
Mm-hmm. On that note, because we're just talking about white sage, and I think one tradition that is quite strongly coming back, and that is the one and only one that you will see a lot of German books on, is Rauhnächte, these rough nights, which is where we essentially purge and cleanse everything, our stables, our households, and usually you have an assortment of usually traditional herbs that you put all together and stuff, and then you burn that for these 12 nights, which I think is where you get your 12 nights of Christmas from in America, probably.
Yes.
But yeah, that is from the 25th of December until the 6th of January. And that's usually the most liminal time for us. But that's, the Rauhnächte are like really becoming a big thing in Germany again, to the point where we have like Rauhnächte calendars, like kind of like an advent.
That's fun.
Yeah. And then you open a door and it's a different incense blend, you know, and then you burn that per day. And then like everyone every day has like a different, like this one is for prosperity or this one is for like, you know.
I want to do that. Yeah. That sounds great. I could use 12 days of purification.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's becoming like a big thing. And like you see a lot of books and stuff like that being kind of written about Rauhnächte, which I think is like us kind of actually trying to like go back to like some folk traditions.
I love that. Well, Ella Harrison, you have been so very generous with your time, and I don't want to keep you because there is quite the time difference between here and Germany, but through the magic of the internet, we get to spend all of this time together. One, if there is just one tradition or one holiday figure, one little wintertime activity that people, if somebody that listens to this show is wanting to reintroduce that wintertime, Yuletide, winter solstice, Christmas time, old world magic into their lives, into their homes, what's one little thing, one little being, one little tradition that maybe they could start that can kind of give them that holiday magic back that you think is maybe a little underappreciated, a little underknown, but has become very special to you?
Yeah, I would probably say the Raunächte, if you look it up, because there's so many different things that tie into it, because that's when you have Perchta coming, and then you've got the tradition of during the time you will put out some food for her that she likes to eat, but she doesn't like certain foods, so that she doesn't slit your belly. And like Perchten and stuff like that kind of come.
If she slits my belly, could she just take out a couple pounds and then sew it back?
I know, right? I wish. Like all those Christmas cookies are like.
Yeah, I'm just like, could you just take out the meal I just had and
honestly,
just overdid it just a little bit.
Yes. Yeah, but probably just if you look it up, if you look into the Raunächte, there's a lot of folklore there, which I think is going to be like a little bit of a snowball effect that I think will lead people into like, oh, this is cool. I could, because, you know, it's one of those situations where it's like a whole rabbit hole that you can then dive into.
What is your favorite figure from this time of year, and what's the scariest one?
Okay, honestly, probably, I would say probably Perchta. I know people are like, oh, Krampus, but I feel like Perchta is the scarier one because she is so ancient and she doesn't have the same moral compass as us. And
I was going to say, she really seems like she doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah, because she really is chained, right? Like if you look at all these postcards, he's always chained to Nikolaus. Like he's kind of kept. I mean, then again, if he breaks free, I don't know. But like, you know, I would say probably.
I gotta say, being chained to Santa sounds like a little bit, just a tiny little bit gay. It just sounds like a little gay. It just sounds just a little gay. It's just all I'm saying. I feel like Santa and Krampus are in a, you know, very special relationship involving whips and chains.
It's that Krampusy. Yeah. Oh my God, he's gonna haunt me for saying that.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Absolutely. If people would love to find more of you on social media, where can they do that?
Okay, so I have a Patreon, which is a good avenue for obviously supporting any creator that has a Patreon. And then, of course, my YouTube channel. I have a video coming about Perchta and Krampus and kind of the differences and stuff. And then, of course, my Instagram. And then I also have...
And those are just at Ella Harrison?
Yeah, exactly. It's everything is just at Ella Harrison. I was really early with
You're
that.
You're so lucky.
Yeah. It was like, because I was so early, I was like, yes.
Some of us have very common names, and we couldn't get our name, so we had to pick other names. Yeah. It's very dumb.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting, because sometimes I'm like, oh, should I have gone with, like, something, like, witchy or something?
Oh, I did that for a long time, and eventually I got, eventually you get tired of it. You do.
Yeah, exactly. You do. And I have horrible memory. I know, like, I would probably be, like, by accident, you know?
Yeah.
Say yeah, something else.
Yeah. It got very tiring 13 years of going, no, don't say that.
Yeah.
No, edit this.
Yeah.
It's very, no, that didn't work for me. Mm-hmm. And the book is The Book of Spells by Ella Harrison. It is a beautiful object. Do you have anything in the works right now?
Let me think. Only one project, but it's not really witchy and I haven't announced it yet or anything like that. It's like completely different. But witchcraft, not really.
Well, when you announce it, I hope you'll come back and let me interview you about it, whatever it is.
Okay.
I'm excited. I don't care. I don't care what it is.
Yes.
I'm very excited. I'm a big fan.
Thank you. Yeah, it would be great fun. I mean, it's like a completely different niche, but yes, it would be really fun.
I write poetry, nonfiction, and young adult fantasy. Believe me, I get it.
Yes. I'm so excited for that that novel about like the Appalachian like witchcraft.
Yeah, Verity Vox and the Curse of. Did I send it to you? Do you want it? I'll send it to you. I will literally send it to you today.
Yeah, I want it.
Oh my God! Yes, I will send it to you. I will send it to you as soon as we're done recording. It'll be in your inbox.
Yes,
of course, of course. Well, Miss Ella Harrison, thank you so much for reintroducing us to kind of an old world German Christmas, German winter magical time. For anybody who's ever just been a little bit curious about where some of these traditions come from and some of the spooky creatures that are waiting for us in those liminal spaces in the dark of night as we tell our scary ghost stories. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I know I probably am like the most rambly all over the place person, but it was great fun and I really, really enjoyed it. And I could technically go on for 3 more hours, but yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you as well.
And that's going to do it here for this episode of Head on Fire. My thanks to my guest, Ella Harrison. Make sure to follow her on social media and get her new book, The Book of Spells, everywhere books are sold. Now, if you like the show and you want to support it, there are a number of ways to help. The easiest and freest way is just telling a friend, being like, hey, I heard this episode. It was all about German Christmas folklore. It's pretty great. You should listen to it. That's a really great way to help build this audience out. Fun fact, I looked at my little Spotify results. Now, it's not like all of the data, but this show grew a lot this year. And that's just because of you all. Word of mouth. That really, really helps other people find this show. If you want to do a little bit more, you could like or rate the show 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon, Audible Podcasts, whatever, or wherever you happen to be listening to this. That helps bump the show up in the algorithm and recommend the show to other listeners like you. If you want to do a little bit more, you can join my Patreon on a monthly basis. There is a free tier if you'd like updates on my upcoming books as I have them and am legally allowed to tell you about them. You can join at patreon.com/headonfirepod. Of course, if you'd like additional audio and video access, as well as archived episodes and a private chat with me, you can join for as little as $1 a month. So all of the tiers are not locked behind a paywall. All of the tiers have the same exact benefits. So I just want to make sure that no matter what you can give, that you have access to everything. You can follow me on social media. I am at headonfirepod everywhere. And remember that my new book, Verity Vox and the Curse of Foxfire, is available for pre-order everywhere books are sold right now. Thank you all so much for tuning in and downloading the show. I'm going to go. Happy holiday season, you all. The next episode is going to be the last one of the year, and then I'm going to go on a much-deserved break. But before I go, I just want to let you know, please never stop seeking illumination like a man with his head on fire seeks water. Be well.